Before you listen to this great episode of Partner with Survivor, we'd just like to tell you about a powerful new practice tool the Safe and Together Institute has launched. Our perpetrator pattern mapping tool has been available for 10 years, but now it's available for the first time in a web-based version. What it does is really help you map perpetrators' patterns of behavior onto child family functioning, talk about its intersections with mental health, substance abuse, and other issues, address intersectionalities, worker safety, all in an easy-to-use online package that protects the confidentiality of your information and lets you wrap it all up in a neat little package, basically, to print it out and to kind of document all those different pieces of information. This is a tool that can be used by both survivors and practitioners. And for the very first time, it's available immediately online without any other prior training.
The training is embedded in this powerful practice tool so that teams that have not been trained in Safe and Together can immediately begin mapping in an effective way.
That's right. It's like having a Safe and Together coach in your back pocket is what I like to say.
There you go.
So we really encourage you to go to our virtual academy, academy.safeandtogetherinstitute.com. Check it out. You know, you can subscribe to it immediately or you can check out a free demo version for 30 days. So please reach out to us and try this new tool. Now enjoy this great episode of Partner with Survivor.
And we're back.
And we're back.
And we're back.
We're back.
Hello.
Hi.
Who are you?
I'm David Mandel, and this is Partnered with a Survivor. Who are you?
I'm Ruth Raimundo Mandel, and this is Partnered with a Survivor, and we're with the Safe and Together Institute. And today, I just want to start off by acknowledging the land that we are on. We are on Tunxus land here in Connecticut, and it is the Tunxus people are part of the Greater Algonquin Tribe. And we would like to acknowledge any elders past, present, and emerging. And we are launching into this podcast today, really excited to do it because we have a new resource, which we think will be really helpful to professionals and to victims who are youth victims in relationship abuse, experiencing relationship abuse and coercive control. And we have been collaborating with an amazing media company and Adam Joel, who is the writer director of The Last Drop, to bring professionals a resource that young people can really connect to that tells the story of relationship abuse in a modern way that young people can really identify with and see themselves in. And at the Safe and Together Institute, we really believe that the way we tell the story of abuse is critically important to interrupting that violence, to preventing that violence, and to assisting people who are experiencing or perpetrating that violence to find safety, to adopt behaviors which are relationally supportive and behaviorally supportive of our connections and relationships as family, as friends, as lovers, as community. So I really want to welcome you, Adam. I was so excited that Leah Vasevich, who is a friend of yours and our regional manager, brought your movie, your project to us while it was still in the early stages of development, and that we had the opportunity to write the professional guides for educators and school social workers who are working with populations of young people to assist them in being informed on how to be an ally, how to support young people who are experiencing that abuse or perpetrating that abuse. And so I kind of just want to go right to you and say hello and say welcome and thank you for being here with us and introduce yourself.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. So as you mentioned, I'm Adam Joel. I'm the writer and director of The Last Drop. And The Last Drop is a short sci-fi film about relationship abuse. And it's really about exploring the memories of survivors. I experienced abuse myself. And when I finally started opening up about it, I really found that so many other survivors only learn the early signs of abuse in hindsight. So the film follows this young couple who use this science fiction device, this service called Retrospect, that lets couples relive shared memories. So if you can imagine reliving your meet cute, your first date, all these sweet memories at first, our couple gets to journey through their past, but it takes a dark turn when he starts manipulating her memories in his favor. So we see these creative visual examples of what gaslighting looks like. Isolation tactics, digital abuse, emotional abuse, all the types of abuse that are lesser known and feel invisible, the hardest ones to spot, the hardest ones to validate, the types of abuse that make up coercive control. That's what this film's about. So it's a bit unusual in that it's a movie where no one gets hit. It's not about those really extreme types of violence we often see in Hollywood movies. It's about the subtler types of abuse that many of your listeners and the professionals you work with are working hard to tell people, hey, this is what coercive control looks like. This is what relationship abuse looks like. So this tool is designed to help show that. So if you're listening and you work in abuse prevention, youth education, if you're a nonprofit that needs fundraising tools, this film has been a great fundraising tool for nonprofits as well. High school and college screenings, we've done conferences at an international scale, as well as training hours. So a lot of folks, you know, social workers and people like that will use the film for 40-hour domestic violence trainings or CEUs. A couple other use cases is working directly with survivors or directly with perpetrators. We have people in, you know, perpetrator intervention programs that are showing this film to a group of perpetrators of abuse to use this sort of fictional story as a buffer to say, hey, let's talk about what these characters are doing first and what are the patterns that are wrong there, and then look at ourselves. So that's just a few examples of how this film can be a tool for your listeners.
I'm really excited that you centered yourself around the non-physical forms of violence and coercive control. It is one of the hardest challenges that we have as an institute to help to retrain people's brains out of that violent focus. And I would love for you to cue up the trailer so people can hear the trailer to The Last Drop and what it covers. And I want to say that as the Safe and Together Institute, because we have centered on coercive control for over 20 years, we saw the value, and we saw that in countries and areas where there are coercive control laws, there was no way to teach young people about what coercive control was, and that this was a great way. So let's hear the trailer, Adam.
Absolutely. Here's an audio trailer for The Last Drop.
Do you want to feel closer to the people you care about? Well, now you can with Retrospect. Our patented technology lets you and your loved one relive your favorite shared memories together. Warning. Retrospect may cause panic attacks, memory loss, depression, and symptoms of PTSD.
Now, having watched the film multiple times, that warning actually gave me chills because I know what comes next. And so, you know, one of the things I can say as a person who's seen this film multiple times is that it is very acknowledging. It is very emotionally powerful in its examples of behaviors. And it is very centered around patterns of behaviors, not just a singular incident of a fight between a young couple, but how vulnerabilities, love, commitment, the desire to nurture someone is manipulated and twisted. You want to talk a little bit about how you as a survivor chose to tell the story that you chose, Adam?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I spent the 3-4 years I was experiencing that relationship and experiencing abuse, totally silent about it, even defensive of my girlfriend at the time, because she would be in one ear saying, no one understands, your family doesn't get it, they're different than my family, saying all these things to me that I would then parrot to my family. And so if someone tried to check in on me and say, hey, what's going on? Like, we saw you, you know, in the middle of the night talking outside with her for like an hour. Is everything okay? I would say, you don't get it. You don't understand. And I would parrot these things she was telling me. But when I finally cracked open, I heard the phrase emotional abuse for the first time and broke down out of nowhere and started pouring everything out to my parents after the relationship had ended, actually. And then it's like the floodgates were open. I went from telling nobody to telling everybody. And as I shared early and shared often, I tried to make a place where people felt comfortable sharing stories back to me. So this kind of communal storytelling method, I started finding not just my own story, but connecting with other survivors and finding the common threads in our memories. And that's really what the writing process was like for me. It wasn't sitting at a laptop in my armchair. It was talking to my Lyft driver about, my sister experienced this. I was talking to a friend. And it really was about this common experience of having a wake-up call where suddenly all the memories look different. And this drip metaphor in the last drop is from this IV drip that's part of this surreal experience the couple goes on, where there's sort of one drop of the sedative, or what they call their love potion, that keeps them unconscious throughout this memory experience. Every time there's a painful memory, another drop of sedative and keeps them unconscious. And it's you know, addictive in the way that abusive relationships can be addictive. And so that gradual buildup is a metaphor that really was part of the starting point, is the idea that abuse doesn't show up on the first date. It's this abusers will do one thing, notch, you know, a little bit more jealousy out this time, a little bit more guilt tripping. And so that gradual buildup of abuse over time, over years sometimes, is what we really wanted to showcase.
Yeah. And I think you did a really good job at that. And also did a really good job at sort of showing the complexity of how we love each other. This is actually one of the things that really made me want to step into supporting your work. And that was that you didn't make the love and care of survivors the problem. You made the way that the person who used, manipulated, took advantage of, blamed, you know, abused the survivor because they were so caring, because they were so loving. You really centered around them. And as you know, a lot of times survivors are victim blamed for picking somebody who's abusive when there is this slow drip of behaviors that ramp up over time. Did you want to say something, David? I knew you.
You know, I really appreciate that you targeted this to young people, you know, because having been in the field for so long, I know that this is there's a real lack of resources, you know, lack of programming. And so this is targeted a lot, could be good for high school. I don't know if you want to speak to whether it can go younger, it can go college and older. Can you just talk about that decision to sort of really target it through the filmmaking and through the age of the actors and the dynamics of digital, you know, phones, and you know, how did you decide to do that?
Absolutely. Well, partially I was making the film I wish I had. So we'd recommend it for as young as middle school, and we've gone up to high school, college, you know, law school, master program, social work program. So the discussion piece can customize it to a variety of age and experience levels. But I was making the film I wish I had when I was in school, and I want to show it to people as they're starting their first relationships or before then. And it was to fill this huge glaring gap in abuse conversations and media. Whereas, you know, when you're a young person, you hear the phrase domestic violence, you think that's a husband and wife, which is, you know, reductive in a gender way, but also in an age way, because as soon as you're able to start a relationship, relationship abuse can start too. And we often protect young people from difficult conversations, leading them to learn by experience, and meaning we're not actually protecting them from those difficult experiences. So I think it's important to show what abusive topics come up when you're that age, because abusers target what's important to you. And so when you're in high school or college, we see conversations about, oh, you chose to go to a different college than my college. That must mean you don't care about me. You're going to college with that person. There's jealousy in clubs and sports, whatever hobbies are bringing someone joy, an abuser might try to pull them farther away from. And then there's the digital abuse aspect, which is huge and ever-changing. But there's a moment in the film when Anthony is telling Sophia, like, turn on location tracking on your phone. There's, you know, getting bombarded with intense text messages. You might see a teenager in your life who's looking down at their phone and you think, oh, how disrespectful, they're not being present. But they might be putting out a fire that you can't see. And I definitely experienced that where, you know, my parents thought I was just a teenager kind of sucked into my phone, but there was a rage and a loneliness and insecurity on the other end of this line. There was this, like, worry about someone else self-harming or harming you. So that digital world is so invisible that we definitely wanted to shed some light on it.
Right. And you did a really good job doing it, you know, to just represent the way that, like, a high school student navigates through the world using that digital reality, how that digital reality is used. You know, I really want to say for the viewers that my experience of watching this was kind of like watching the Black Mirror. It's kind of freaky. It's freaky in a really good way at the end. And even though we've had you at our conferences now three times, every time I watch the movie, I cry and I get very emotional. And I have to tell people, I have to warn people that though there's no physical violence in this movie, that you will feel the sense of suffocation. You will feel a sense of not being able to make the right choice no matter what. You will feel that sense of not knowing what to do next and desperately wanting to find a way forward. And that's very present in the film.
And my experience watching those screenings and being in the room, and you've been virtual for some of those, so I've been in the room, is the palpable feeling of impact when the lights come up. You know, as I could feel
the silence,
but the silence with a heaviness to it, that they were impacted, other people crying, you know, but people really, you know, you've done your job with the film because it impacts people. They really absorb it. And I think that a lot of people, when they think about coercive control of domestic violence, they think adults, they think about kids being used to control, they think about shared finances, they think about living together. I think that's a lot of what people think about when they think about the entrapment that comes with coercive control. And you've done a really good job communicating the entrapment that can happen in a young person's relationship.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about our own kids and how, and this is different than when I was growing up, you know, that sharing locations and where you are is the norm. You know, it's sort of that they know where all their friends are, and that you listen to the conversations between, you know, our daughter and her friends saying, oh, you're not here yet. This, you know, so that the ability to separate out kind of normal, shared, consensual, oh, we kind of let each other where we know where we are, which is kind of connection. And when it moves over to control and entrapment abuse, I think you do that really well in the film.
Yeah.
It's that's a great phrase you put out there. The fine line between feeling really closely connected and being controlled. And it's tricky, especially with digital stuff. Like, you know, my girlfriend now, who I have a great, healthy relationship with, you know, we've memorized each other's phone passcodes just because, you know, hey, can you turn off my alarm? My phone's across the room. Things like that, that I'm not at all worried about. But we see in the film, you know, Anthony's using the same kind of knowledge that a healthy relationship might have of knowing each other's phone code for innocuous reasons. And he's using that to check her phone without her, to snoop on her social media and her messages. So there is a lot of closeness that can happen, even from an early age when you're not living together, where they can use that intimate connection to in the wrong way. And you mentioned with teenagers as well, like parents of teenagers can often feel a hard time communicating and connecting already. So it's kind of poised for the type of isolation that abusers like, is you already feel embarrassed by your parents, or you're already rebelling a little bit. It doesn't take that much to pull you a little bit farther away. So that's really challenging, because once an abuser has isolated someone from their other support networks, Someone at a screening told me recently this great metaphor of like offering the pain and the medicine. So an abuser might be the one to hurt you, but then they also might make it so that they're the only one who can comfort you as well, and that's how that cycle gets going.
Yeah. You know, I really appreciate the impact of the film, and it really does have a discernible impact. We've seen it multiple times in multiple settings. You didn't just want this film to uncover these behaviors and then leave people to deal with it themselves. So can you talk about some of the resources and tools that you have worked in, we've worked in, and One Love has worked in to help people to process the feelings, the knowledge, the awareness, the challenges that may come up from uncovering the coercive control and relationship abuse they're experiencing?
Yeah, absolutely. This is why I was so excited to partner with Safe and Together. So when I first was making the film, I talked with a survivor who watched an abuse movie in a health class. I think it was Jennifer Lopez's movie Enough. And she had that wake-up call where she's like, oh my gosh, I'm really connecting with this. She lets all the other students leave the room and she tells her health teacher, I think my relationship's like that. And in a hugely disappointing moment, that health teacher just says, oh, I think you should talk to someone about that. So this train-the-trainer model that Safe and Together has is the reason I'm partnering with y'all. And it's so crucial because whether you're an educator, a social worker, a prevention expert, coercive control is kind of new. We have a lot of people don't know what that means. A lot of people don't know about the types of abuse that don't leave a bruise. And Safe and Together made a great professional ally guide. So when we tell survivors, we tell people, hey, you should confide in someone. You should tell someone what you're going through. It's like, well, who do they tell? Safe and Together is making better trusted adults, not just for young people, but in a variety of fields, so that that person who gets confided in, who gets told, hey, I'm experiencing something and I don't know what to do about it. Maybe it's abuse, maybe it's not. Safe and Together made a guide to go with the film. And that's that package tool on your website about coercive control that I'm so excited to share with your listeners.
And not just for professionals. You partnered with One Love, which is a youth organization that deals with relationships, abuse, and consent issues. And they created a guide for young people to have their own discussions. So there's multiple layers of intervention, discussion, and again, you know, really brilliantly for both the person who may be choosing those behaviors or engaging in those behaviors, because that's all they know, that's all they've ever learned from their own family, and for the person who may be experiencing those behaviors. So, you know, this is not just a conceptual resource. It's not just a fun movie that you watch. It's meant to be, it's not a fun movie.
It's a good movie. It's a powerful movie. And I'm not sure anybody would describe it as a fun movie.
And it's about 40 minutes long, you know, so it's substantial enough to give enough information and behavioral information. But really the goal is to provide guidance for educators, therapists, you know, anyone working with young people in educational settings to help young people understand what relationship abuse and coercive control look like and what the next steps are.
I do want to say the fun thing, by the way, you're not just the writer and director. You have you're an actor with a small part, and you provide comic relief.
You do. You
know, I did cast myself for some comic relief in there.
Anyway, so there is a little bit of break in the energy here and there, but otherwise it's a very intense, very powerful, very effective, and moving, ultimately moving movie that really meets a real need out there in the world.
Well, and we made go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we also made a really intentional choice to end hopeful. So I only like movies with happy endings. I don't know about you guys. But in this film, we have her, you know, find sort of three paths to hope, you know, a friend, a family member, and a professional. So we know not everyone watching the film has a close relationship or a healthy relationship with their family member. So we wanted to show those three different paths, a friend, family, professional, to show, all right, everyone can find someone that might be able to help them a little bit, you know, out of a situation like this. And so that was really important to us, is like, as powerful and moving as those first pieces might be, we want to turn that pain into purpose and show where folks can go from here.
And that's perfect because I want you to tell people what you want professionals to take from this movie and these resources, and then what you want survivors to take.
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple key takeaways that I think are digestible and memorable are, one, sacrifice is not a love language. So we see countless times in the film, Anthony is, you know, force pressuring and begging Sophia to prove that she loves him over someone else, whether it's a friend or a family member or a hobby. We see Sophia's world shrink. And some movies, you know, portray this idea that you should give up everything for someone you love. But I am pushing back against that and saying sacrifice is not a love language. Another one, impact matters more than intention. So if even if someone in a relationship says, oh, I know I hurt your feelings, I know I crossed your boundary, but I did that because there's a tendency to try to justify any unhealthy and abusive actions. But the impact of those actions matters more than what an abusive person had in their head. Another tip, talk during the good times. Healthy relationships shouldn't feel scary. So it's a really good sign if you can bring up, hey, this thing from last week is still kind of upsetting me. Can we talk about this? Without fear of setting off another rage, without feeling like you're walking on invisible eggshells. Another tip I have is the idea of loving and leaving. I think a lot of love songs and movies portray this idea that if you love someone, you never leave them, no matter what. And Anthony often says that in the film is like, I want to be together forever, no matter what. But with the wrong mentality, that potentially romantic idea becomes very entrapping, which is the nature of course of control. So it's important to know that you might have to leave someone you still actively love. And that's what makes it really hard. Is, you know, some people stay because they're afraid, they're in danger, but some people stay because they're in love and they care about this person and they're genuinely trying to help them, as well as many other ties, financial or children. And then the last little piece that I really like to share is this mnemonic device that you've already memorized. It goes phone, wallet, keys. And that's what you check when you leave the house. That's what's important to you. It's got my phone, my wallet, my keys. But that also represents things that are important in a relationship. So my phone, that represents my people. My contacts are in there, my emergency contacts, my social media. Is anyone controlling my access to my people? Phone, wallet, keys, my wallet. My wallet represents my choices. There's financial freedom, but there's also identity. Your ID is in there. And we see in the film, Anthony is attacking Sophia's choices, whether it's her college choice, what she wears, calling her outfit slutty. You want to check, are my choices being supervised or supported? And then last of that, phone, wallet, keys, is my keys. That's my freedom. We see Anthony literally hides her keys, but also, you know, metaphorically, he's pressuring her, guilt tripping her to skip family events, to skip fun with friends. We see her start calling in sick to things when she's not sick because of this pressure. So even if someone's not literally locking doors on you, this idea of my keys, my freedom is, do I feel comfortable and safe going where I want to go? So that's phone, wallet, keys, my people, my choices, my freedom.
I love that mnemonic device. I think a lot of professionals have picked it up from the conferences.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. And just the last thing to wrap up, you just want to acknowledge that you, as somebody who identifies as a male victim, really chose to center, for a lot of really wonderful reasons, the survivor as being female in this. And just, can you speak to that? Because I think the film encapsulates this, the reality that there are male victims, but that the predominance is really female victims. Can you speak to that a little bit, and then we'll wrap up?
Yeah, absolutely. Gender was an interesting and challenging topic, but ultimately I did decide to portray a female survivor of abuse, even though I'm a male survivor of abuse, because I really wanted to make this character an amalgamation of a bunch of survivor stories. So I talked with dozens of other survivors, and I think making it a fiction film and having a character we can all kind of pour our stories into and feel seen by was important to me. So I think changing the gender helped me create a character more people could empathize with that goes beyond my own story. And, you know, ultimately anyone can be an abuser and anyone can experience abuse. But I do think it's important to acknowledge that gender plays a role, and, you know, women and non-binary folks do experience higher rates, even though a lot of men like myself experience abuse and don't know what to do with that. So we also, you know, across sexuality too, there's a brief moment where Sophia, the main character, realizes her roommate Nina experienced abuse in a same-sex relationship. So they connect on that as well. And, you know, the survivors and the professionals in your network have been very kind to me and inclusive of me as a male survivor. So I've found that what you say is true. You know, abuse is a pattern of behaviors, and anyone who's experienced those behaviors tends to be, you know, bring each other into this kind of community and be really supportive of each other.
Well, I'm really happy that we're part of your community and you're part of our community, and that we can support your survivor-led storytelling to help change the way that people understand coercive control. And just to speak our commitment that we love lived experience experts' innovations, because they directly address the realities that those people experiencing abuse on the ground experience, both the impediments from other people understanding what they're experiencing, professionals not knowing how to help us or assist us, or actively blaming us for that abuse. And in that movie, you have done such a beautiful job telling the story of what support looks like. That was very wonderful to see that even though the person who is abusing tried to strip that support away, which is one of the first things that abusers try to do, that you really focused on the support network of the survivor and how those people were supporting the survivor and how they were there for the survivor. And that was just a wonderful thing to see.
So let's hear how people access this film. Can you talk to us about that, the practical part of that? How do people get this film? How do they show it? What's that look like?
Yes. Although we're distributing it on our own website, thelastdropfilm.com, I recommend going through Safe and Together's platform, their virtual learning center, to find the name of it, if you could remind
it's
me exactly.
The Virtual Academy.
It's okay.
The Virtual Academy. Oh, I meant the name of our program here.
Yes.
Combination.
Yes, it's on the Virtual Academy as The Last Drop Film.
Yep.
It is a bundle, so it does have the resources contained within it as well as the film. And you, if you purchase it, you do get unlimited use of showings for 1 year. So you can show this to classrooms, to professionals, to groups for up to a year for one very low cost, actually.
That's right.
And you know, if you're listening to this, you know, you're my heroes, you're helping survivors, you're helping young people, you're helping people who need this type of support. So it's just a tool in your tool belt. Because if you're listening to this, you deserve all the help you can get at, you know, preventing abuse and changing the way we heal from it and respond to it as a society.
Yeah.
And so that web address is academy.safeandtogetherinstitute.com, and you just click on the area for the bundles and it'll take you there, and you'll be able to purchase it immediately, start using it immediately. And I'm just, you know, I'm really pleased around the collaboration, and really just want to thank both of you, because Ruth, you were the lead person inside the Institute, and obviously Adam, this is your project, and it, to see it come to fruition and to see the ways we could work together with a survivor, like you said, on a survivor-led project is very exciting, and I'm really proud of the entire effort.
Well, Adam, thank you for being with us today. We're really excited to push this out. We will push out a link to the Last Drop bundle on the Virtual Academy within the podcast, so you can go check it out.
That's right.
And I've been Ruth Raimondo Mandel from the Safe and Together Institute.
And I'm still David Mandel, CEO of the Safe and Together Institute. And just thank you all for listening in today.
Yes. Thank you, Adam.
And we're out.